Blog Talk Radio.
The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron. A podcast featuring Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC radio network. During each episode, Elvira and Deb will help you create rituals, cast spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures, and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Deb, take it away.
Whee! We are definitely sliding into December very nicely.
There is a little brushing of snow out here, so I guess I could just slide right on.
I guess. We're basically just freezing our little noogies off. It's definitely getting cold and all that, so who knows what the moisture level will turn into. It's just cold. Lots of little freeze winds that make us also very chilly. But so this is Elvira. I'm Elvira, and my co-host is Deb. We are here tonight starting the month of December out, which is our theme is Yuletide spirits. And we are starting with one that is going to be very unusual and very unique. Her name is La Befana, and of course that's Italian. And so we will talk more about that, and we have a little surprise on how we're handling our second half, but it'll be fun. So basically just starting by talking about we haven't been with everybody for a couple of weeks now because we had our time off for Thanksgiving with a rebroadcast. So for me, it's been very unusual. I've had a whole week of my granddaughter being off, not that she spent it all with me, but we had a lot of fun starting with the weekend on Sunday of that week of Thanksgiving. And it was, we got to hang out and do our breakfast stuff and everything. But it's the funny part is that she happens to like some murder mysteries that I have been watching. And there's one from Australia, but the one that I wanted to start her on, and this is one that I know a lot of people know, is called Castle. And it's basically set up where there's a female detective, and then the gentleman is a writer, and he's a writer of murder mysteries. And, of course, he's basically very sought after, and he's got a real attitude, and he's funny, but he's really good at helping solve mysteries. So he sort of gets his way in, and from the next thing is the different episodes. Well, my granddaughter loves this. And so we kind of have moved into that. So that was my big thing on Sunday. By the time we hit Thanksgiving, it was a lot of eating. I ate so much that it hurt, and I actually at one point said, excuse me, and, everybody was just hanging out and talking and everything. I took off and did a long walk because my belly, oh, my God, I was just like, and had a lot of fun because I met a lady who was walking her dog, which was it was a Dane Doodle. It was a poodle bred with a Great Dane, and he was big, and so I was laughing when I saw her. I said, my dog, which is a Westie, would just be half of your leg, his leg. And we had a really nice little, meet and greet conversation. Then she went on her way, and I finished my walk and came in, and everybody was pouring over the desserts. And I'm like looking at this going, I just can't get into it. But of course, you have to. You get, your food. And then, we all kind of sat there kind of bulging.
Maybe just a little bite.
Yeah, exactly. Just a little
yeah.
bit. So, yeah, I kind of did that. And then, you know, everybody kind of was like, oh, God, I don't know. And then the next thing we know, it's, you know, getting on time for us to mosey on home. So I came home, took my two dogs, sat in my recliner with them kind of bolstering either side and sat and basically watched a couple of shows that I don't even remember because all I did was kind of open my eye every once in a while to see whether it was important or not.
Right.
And then crawled off to bed because, oh, my God, it was good. I mean, they have ham here and peas, black-eyed peas, mm-hmm. and, you know, green beans. And there's some real – I got used to this a long time ago when I used to just visit my daughter and her then boyfriend mm-hmm. who became her husband. And I kept looking at this going, turkey and ham, beans, you know. I mean, my brain just – there was, like, all these things that I couldn't wrap my head around. So, but it was really good. Mm-hmm. And, you know – then got my granddaughter again on Friday, and then we all set up for, you know, this coming week. And, of course, you know, there we are. So how was your 2 weeks gone off of this show?
Oh, it – a lot of stuff over the last couple of weeks, you know, with holiday time. I usually feel like the beginning, you know – well, actually, it kind of starts with Samhain, Halloween,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
then after that, it's like all the way through the end of January for me is like busy with things that I work with, but also busy with family and friends. And mm-hmm. so we did like a Thanksgiving we do a morning coffee get together on Thanksgiving at a local mm-hmm. coffee shop that's really large enough to hold all of my extended family. And so
mm-hmm.
that's a really cool tradition that we started some years back because the family just got too big to hold in one person's house. So
mm-hmm.
because I have two sisters and a brother and they all have kids and they have, the kids have kids now. And so, it's kind of nice because in that way we get to see like the cousins and the aunts and the family friends that we would otherwise probably not get to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's a nice way to do that if anyone out there has like just too many family to fit in one house.
yeah.
You know, and then after that, you know, after the coffee, you know, that's like kind of from 9 to 11. And then we stopped back home and we picked up the side dishes that we made and we went over to my daughter Sherry's house for like the traditional turkey and potluck goodies, you know, with my kids and my grandkids and stuff. And so that was nice. And then I have four kids and two of them are Sagittarius babies. So
imagine that.
Yeah. And so my oldest son, Adrian De Leon, his birthday was on the 3rd. And so me and him and a few other family members, you know, went and he had the idea for doing a birthday bowling bash.
Oh, my.
So, yeah, it was, I have not gone bowling for like 20 years, but it was really fun. And I'm a really, really, really terrible bowler. And that
okay.
actually kind of made it even more fun. And, you know, I had grandkids and both my sons and my sister, you know, and my sister, oh my God, my sister's so funny. My sister Sharon, she, mm-hmm. she went to and she had the nerve to score higher than me, and she was throwing the ball. She was throwing the ball with two hands. She's like,
oh yeah, like down the center,
and yep. just throwing it. Yeah, yeah, with two hands. And she, oh my God, she's so funny. Like uh-huh. my high score, I think was in the 50s.
Uh huh. Uh huh.
It was hilarious.
Oh my God.
You know, and then this past Sunday, I hosted me and my sister Sharon, we hosted a Dark Moon Step Nan ritual over at our local shop, Altered State of Mind. And that was a lot of fun. We had people who had a little bit of experience with Hecate. And then we also had a number of people who were totally new to Hecate. And so it seemed like they all had a really good experience. And so I was real pleased with that. And so besides doing the fun stuff, I've been, you know, busy making oils and candles to deliver to Altered State of Mind. I've been doing a lot of candle divinations and tarot readings. And also, you know, because of the time of year, I think, is I've been taking a little extra time with a couple of women that I sponsor in AA who have had challenging times around the holidays. Then I actually was asked a while ago, and so it was just like a little half-hour thing, but I was a guest on a local podcast called Women Who Howl at the Moon with Colleen Duvall. And that was a couple days ago, and that should air sometime near the upcoming winter solstice. And, of course, I mentioned our podcast, and I also mentioned and said, you know, because we were talking about, you know, folk magic, hoodoo, conjure, that sort of stuff. And I said, hey, you know, anybody that's, you know, wanting more information on that, get over to the Lucky Mojo Root Work Hour, because you will hear a bunch of good things. And so I'll just end with, on top of the busyness, I'm really mostly trying to focus on self-care, though, and not get too caught up in the rush family and holiday stuff, which I think is just, you know, so, so important, I think, for all of us, because it can take over sometimes.
right.
Yeah.
Well, but, I think that sounds like, you know, a really good focus added to all of the things that, you know, we are doing at this time of the year. But let's kind of move on into Laba Fauna, and we'll go with, you know, some of the things. Now, she is, she's very ancient. And as a matter of fact, they, you know, really have a hard time tracing all, you know, with any kind of certainty, the real origin. But it's interesting that they go, that actually the ancient ritual of the celebrating the end of the winter solstice and the beginning of spring, the 12 nights after winter solstice, is what kind of where she fits in, even though obviously we have December 21st as the solstice, and then of course Christianity has December 25th as the birth of Christ. And so, you know, I mean, but it's within that time frame. But the fact that she's a very mysterious female figure that is witchy, an old crone woman, basically with a, you know, kind of a black shawl that she wears over her, you know, her back, and then a kerchief over her head, and she rides a broomstick, but got to give her credit, she rides it backwards. So that's another one of those, like, awesome for, you know, of the energy.
Yeah.
And basically, you know, she flies over the fields and, you know, basically blesses to ensure a good harvest for the coming new year. But she also is got a connection to the Roman aspect of Saturnalia and the honoring of a, you know, certain deities. And one of them is a goddess called Strania, and she's the goddess of strength and good fortune. And so they kind of connect a little bit.
Who's that goddess?
Strania, Strenia.
Oh.
Strania.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
And she's kind of, you know, again, you've got to, you know, the energy, like, okay, goddess Fortuna is what they also throw in there as a goddess of fortune, good fortune. But, you know, you're looking at Italy in the Roman times. There were, like, here we have different states. So So we're like one United States, and then we got a bunch of other states, and, you know, the states are kind of have their own little, you know, segment of what they do. So you have that, and, you know, she basically is something that has been, people kind of don't know how to describe her. Some of them say she's, you know, she's basically a crone. She comes in, she comes down the chimney, so she always has soot on her face because she's coming down the chimney. But she takes her broom and she sweeps up, so she cleans up. And the children, basically the point of reference is to put out their shoes or a sock, and she would, for the good children, put in candy and figs and, you know, fruit and maybe a little, you know, a little gifty type thing. We would classify it probably as a toy, but you don't know at that time what, you know, it might be just a stick. But for those that weren't good, she would put in soot into their sock. Now, the reality is that the coal that eventually went on, and we will talk more about other Yuletide spirits after the commercial, is it was very, very precious. So they didn't give coal out to kids because that's what made the fires and kept the families and the peasants warm in their little huts. So it was
they
the
needed
soot.
That coal.
Yeah, yeah, they needed that coal. So that was part of the tradition of what they would do. And they would leave out, and I love this, they would leave out cookies if they could have it, or some kind of, what's the word I want to call, bread or a little piece of something like that. And, again, a glass of wine. They're Italian, of course, right? So, you know, it was all about that kind of a process. And, you know, they had different things that they would do in honor of her that eventually, you know, built up. And, I mean, I may talk about it a little later, but I thought I would go ahead and turn this over to you, Deb, so you could talk a little bit about her.
Sure. Yeah, I've always, you know, I'm sure it was only a few years ago that I had first heard of La Befana. And I'm not Italian. My sister Sharon is married to a Sicilian, and so I did hear about La Befana a little bit, and I was always intrigued by her. Just this whole idea of a Yuletide witch, you know. I just the image of that just seemed so sweet. So, you know, a lot of scholars say that her story has definitely pre-Christian origins, and that whole tradition of leaving or exchanging gifts, I think you might have mentioned, might be related to the early Roman customs that take place in midwinter around the time of Saturnalia. So today they do still celebrate and have festivals in La Befana's honor, especially people who follow and the practice of Stregoria. And so she, kind of like a Saint Nick or Santa Claus, but her night is that feast of the Epiphany, and so it's like the Epiphany Eve in early January, and so and I think they also call that the 12th night.
Yes, they do.
Okay, and so she does, you know, fly around on her broom, delivering gifts, and like you said, that might be, you know, candy or fruit or small gifts or coal if the child is naughty. But like you pointed out, that's interesting that that coal would be actually something that was very much needed. And I love that the whole story of La Befana's broom. I've heard that it's more than just for the practical transportation. that she will also tidy up a messy house and sweep the floors.
Mm-hmm.
And because she kind of gets a little bit sooty from coming down the chimneys, and it's only polite that she kind of comes, that she also cleans up the house after herself. And
right.
When I saw that, I was like, damn, I hope she comes to my house.
True,
I
true.
Could definitely use that.
Uh-huh.
Other sources say that they think that her broom is thought to sweep away the old year to make room for the new.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that thought, too. Mm-hmm. I kind of have an affection for brooms. Anyway, from my beginning witchery practices, you know, where we always use the broom to mark the area in the circle where it was, like, closed, where
right.
in case anybody needed to leave, you know, which you did not promote that, but then you would have to use that. So I've always had, you know, for brooms in which, or vessels in witchcraft.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so I guess I should say a little about Epiphany, which would be the night of January 5th, because then, or in the early hours of January 6th. And so in Christianity, well, I guess in Eastern Christianity, it's supposed to mark the baptism of Jesus. And in Western Christianity, it is the commemoration of the adoration of the Magi, or the three kings.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so there's a whole other thing connected to that, with the many places celebrating Epiphany with a king's cake, or a three kings cake. And so I know in New Orleans, as well as other places around the world, I know my daughter-in-law, Tabitha, she was born in Venezuela, and her mother was born in Spain, and she is really big on making a king's cake every year. And so there's that little baby toy that's placed inside the cake, and whoever gets the baby in their piece of cake is thought to receive good luck and prosperity for the coming year. And I actually use one of those little babies in my bone oracle. I have one of those little chingy babies in there. So La Befana is believed to be very much a survival of the old religion and a surviving memory of the goddess of the witch cult around, you know, the areas of Italy. And there's something else that's kind of cool is there was a tradition, and I don't know if you were going to maybe go into this, but of that procession of Befana and her husband, Befano.
Yes. Yes.
And they're dressed as peasants, and both of them have kind of humped backs, and they carry long staffs. And what I heard is that at this time, children at home will get busy writing their wishes on a piece of paper, which are then placed in the hearth and allowed float up into the chimney.
Mm-hmm.
They do that, and I don't know if that's something that you wanted to go on more about, or I can go on more about.
I know that, you know, we're coming, we've got about 5 more minutes before our our commercial break, but
yeah.
If, you know, you want to say that, I know that I also wanted to mention a little bit about her Neolithic roots as well. So,
yeah.
You know, I don't want you to lose sight of where you're at. So finish off with the floating
okay.
of the wishes.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's a certain chant that goes with it. Befana, Befana, you are my lady, you are my wife. Throw something down to me, a small orange or Tifaninos or a piece of pecorino. And so Tifaninos, I'm probably not saying it right, is a small biscuit, and a pecorino is a special type of cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of neat. It sounds like a very neat tradition, because as the procession moves through the streets, there's usually a few musicians with them and a horse. And as they go to each house, they're calling out to the children, and they sing a song to Bifana. And then as the children are doing their part with their notes and stuff like that, and then Bifana and some of the people in the procession are usually given a glass of wine and some treats or maybe a little tip money, and then they move on to the next house. And so it just seems like that just seems like a very sweet, very wonderful old festive way of, honoring Bifana and giving the kids and, other family members a lot of fun.
Right. And they do a lot of things with the old Bifana doll, and they have the doll. They will make, and this is in the ancient times, they made the effigies of her, and they would, throw it into the bonfire, and that would be the way to bring the old year, out and the new year in, as the image of, Mother Earth old is dying, and then you sow new seeds for new life and the young nature. And that's why they were talking about it being even back to the Neolithic beliefs and practices that evolved, into the goddess, because it was associated with fertility and agriculture. So there is it does go back, but it doesn't have the kind of written history that we can find with a lot of other deities and energies that we have associated with them. So it's just a practice, and they do enjoy having the kids having if they're out looking, they can't look for her, they can't wait up for her, because she will technically kind of playfully bat them with her broom. So it's like the same thing as the Santa, and kids put the milk and cookies out, but they have to go to sleep and they can't see Santa, that kind of a thing. And I know there's all that mystery of her being there. And I was glad that you mentioned her husband, because they do have that. And then, of course, they have others that go with them. And it's kind of like mumming. They do songs, and they would, as the practice began to enhance itself, it became the poor people going around doing this. And it was a way for them to get a glass of wine or get a little piece of food. And, in that process, of course, the little, the gifts that were given to the children were part of another, were part of this other thing, but it was simple gifts. It wasn't, computers
no
and
X-boxes.
Things like that. No. And, this was of the peasants. This was of the farmland, the people. And actually had a forbidding of any rich people, any rich men would come together and do a band. That was prohibited, because it was for the specific reason to help with the people that were, the peasants, to get a little extra for their food. And she was definitely, part of that process. So they did at one point, now this is more modern, they did at one point ban the process in 1977, and then brought it back in 1985 of these kind of things in Italy, the prime minister did. But it was not something, it was so rooted, that people did not want that to happen, so they did it anyway. But at this point, I think we need to break ourselves into our commercial break so we can come back and talk some more things about Bifana, but also other Yuletide spirits. So, Nagashiva, please break us away.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages. LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com. The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman, Sundays, 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays, 4 to 5:30, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Miss Phoenix LeFay, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield, in syndication, Wednesdays, and The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, Thursdays, 4 to 5. All time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com.
I love that song. It makes me so bouncy. It doesn't matter. Yes.
Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm turning this over to you, Deb, so you can kind of bring out the other aspects that we have decided to talk about on the second half.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's dive in. So thinking of Yuletide, this is a period of several days, you know, around and including the winter solstice, Christmas Day, and stretching over New Year. And so that word Yule comes from, I've read, an old English word, Yule, which refers to an old pagan festival or a 12-day feast that took place in December. And so the Yule log is burned by witches and pagans in a fireplace or cauldron to symbolize to the Lord or God that they are reborn, and it symbolizes the return of the sun. And so a lot of folks will save like a little piece of this year's Yule log to light next year's Yule log. And mm-hmm. in this way, then the Yule log also is also symbolically reborn, which is kind of a cool idea. Yeah. And then, you know, we do other things that are traditionally like Christmas things, but they're really pre-Christian. We decorate a tree, we hang a wreath, and we exchange gifts, which symbolizes the hope for the future.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm, you know, just reflecting on December, it really begins and goes into the peak darkness. And as we get to the darkest night of the year on the winter solstice, which brings forward the whole Yuletide period with the birth and the rebirth or the renewal of light, and, you know, whether this is in, you know, the pagan image of the sun or the Christian image of the sun, you know, and then we go into January and see the end of the Yuletide period with La Befana, the good witch, which I really like. I like just learning a little more about her. Point, I would like to talk just a little bit about Yuletide spirits in general. Some of the spirits associated with Yuletide are angels and ancestors, elves and fairies and witches, among, like, there's so many different spirits that are associated with Yuletide.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and something that I think is so neat is in the not so distant past, before, you know, TV and electronics, it was very traditional to tell ghost stories around Christmas or Yule time, mm-hmm. especially back in the Victorian times. you know, because this is like a time of family get-togethers, you know, feasting and celebrating. And I think that many spirits of the dead are attracted to this high vibration.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like to burn candles on my ancestor altar and talk to everyone there. Now being an old lady myself, I have quite a number of people on my ancestor altar. And I'll usually set an extra place at the table for them. And I like to burn, I usually burn like tea lights in like the little red and green glass candle cups. And mm-hmm. I'll just say that if you do that, I highly recommend going to, don't go to a Walmart or go to, I'm going to actually suggest go to a Catholic store if there's any by you and buy some really good quality tea light holders where there is actually colored glass and not just a glass that has a coating of color on it, because I've bought some of those and they don't last very long. It's like the first time you wash them, the color comes
mm-hmm.
off.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a number of those little glass tea light holders, and I pull out the red and the green ones every holiday season. And I like to talk about the dead and what they did to celebrate the season. Like, did they hide presents? Were some of them more of a Scrooge? Or did they have favorite things that they baked for the holidays? I know my Aunt May was big for that. She, oh my goodness, she had the best pies ever. and to mm-hmm. me, these are the Yuletide spirits that I am most connected to. I like to make some of the things that they made or do some of the customs that they brought to the family. And mm-hmm. I think that also might be why I like to watch one of the many renditions of A Christmas Carol.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, you got those ghosts in there. And mm-hmm. the ghost of Christmas past represents memory. And the ghost of Christmas present represents generosity and goodwill. And the ghost of Christmas future represents fear of death or fear of the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that, like, that energy of the past, present, and future intertwines and flows through that whole Yuletide season.
Mm-hmm.
We can hide from them, or we can embrace them, like in the form of, you know, gratitude, forgiveness, and kind of like a rebirth of that own light inside of us.
Mm-hmm.
so, yeah. You know, December really seems to be a month where the forces of nature come together to help us give birth to that light within ourselves. And it's just, you know, this wondrous yearly cycle. It's just a time where we can choose to embrace that light and where we can kind of find redemption and the rebirth of our, like, our own inner personal strength.
mm-hmm.
You know, so that's just a perfect time, because while nature sleeps, kind of gather around the fire or around the tree to share old stories. And these old stories can really reawaken our souls and help us return to the place that feels like home, you know,
right.
The home that's within our hearts. I think the season is often celebrated with a festival of lights, and the lights look all the more significant because of the darkness. And
mm-hmm.
it seems like a lot of the practices we do around this time of year helps us to raise our personal vibration, like
mm-hmm.
singing or doing things for others and giving donations, you know, dancing, skating maybe when I was younger.
Yes.
And just kind of creating an atmosphere of warmth and comfort to share with others. And so I think that, like, as we celebrate this season, I hope we can all get personal time, though, you know, to take care of ourselves, to process everything, you know, to tell our stories and to tell the stories of those that have gone before us, but also to get in touch with our some of our maybe some of these outer Yuletide times to nourish our inner spirit.
Yeah. Very much so. Yeah. It's interesting because, actually, I was born during this time. So, of course, it has its own personal meaning, but I've always been attracted to the time and the energy. And it's interesting you're talking about, you know, different things to bring the various spirits in and, you know, around, whether they be ancestors or nature spirits or even the deities and that divinity to bring it in. It's fascinating because I remember as a young person and a child, you know, the family, no matter how much you love your family, and holidays always seem to have times of drama, but there would always be stories told of different things when they were young or growing up. I learned a lot about, you know, New York in the 1900s, the 1920s, the 30s, you know, that kind of a thing, because that's where my father was born and raised. And then when my mother, of course, was, you know, Vermont and New England, and so there were different things that got talked about. You learn, and that's part of those spirits, even if you don't know who they were because they left the plane long before you came in. It's about who, you know, part of that energy. And it's interesting how you broke down the I have watched as many permeations of that movie, including Scrooged, you know, as a version of it with, you know, more modern. And I really feel that. And I go with that and I go, oh, that is so great. I have a collective, and my daughter grew up with, dare I say, VHSs of those. And now she has DVDs that my granddaughter's growing up, along with the more modern one. And, you know, the modern one that I wanted to share, which was, it was one of those little gems you get on Netflix, and, you know, you just sort of look at it and go, hey, oh, that's cute, let me look at it. But, you know, it is called Noel. And I mentioned this to everyone before we started our show, but it's basically, Noel is the Santa Claus under the name of Kringle family. It's hereditary, and the son, Matt, is always the one that, you know, kind of the son gets the next generation to come in. And so, of course, this Santa Claus had both a son and a daughter, and the son, being the elder, was handed the hat at a certain point, and then eventually Santa Claus passed away, so he started his training. He was anything but happy about it. He felt stupid, he didn't do well, and all of that. But the girl, Noelle, had certain gifts, and she didn't necessarily think about it. There she could tell who was good and who was naughty, and she could recite, you know, different things about the family, you know, the children and their, you know, things and all. And through a series of adventures, which I refuse to divulge, you'll have to go to the movie, she eventually becomes the Santa. And it's nothing about being female or male. It's the gift of that was given to an individual soul or spirit that was in harmony with it. And she, being a female, was the one. And the walking away from it having to be a male, that it was the spirit that was the most important thing. I thought it was fascinating, and it wasn't something that was in my mind, you know, a big, you know, thing to rally around, like, you know, the calling card of the feminine energy getting, you know, it's just dues. It was just if you took it for what it was saying, it's the spirit. It's that energy. And I think become my new favorite movie for the holidays.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But,
yeah.
So
Feel good.
Yeah, the feel good. And, you know, there's always ones about, you know, some of the older ones I know are, they have certain flavors, you know, It's a Wonderful Life obviously has meaning. Yeah. And there are times when we feel that down and that lost, and suddenly the process of realizing, you know, at some point through some situation, how much you mean to the family, friends, the world, what you are, and realizing instead of the glass half empty, the glass is half full, I think is another part of this time frame, because you face your fears. You face the things that are dark, and, you know, then you find the things that are, that bring you hope and joy and, you know, that kind of a thing. And whether it's a movie, it's a story, it's a music, you know, where, whether or not it's rock or not, I don't know. But, you know, the idea that there is something inspiring beyond that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any other thoughts?
Oh, I've got lots of other thoughts. But before I hop into some of the other thoughts, I just wanted to back up just as far as pop culture goes. I just have to say that there on Netflix, they had a few years ago The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. And one of my favorite episodes on there was their Christmas episode, because they incorporated a lot of folklore about Gryla, which is a kind of a witchy, widely feared character in Icelandic Christmas folklore, and the Yule Lads, which were very mischievous, trouble-causing entities, you know, and that, I thought they did a really good job of incorporating the use of that mythology in that episode. And so if anyone out there is interested in just kind of having a fun look at how they modernized and used that mythology, I thought that was a real fun one. But but beyond that, I was thinking for there's so many little things that we can do that I think to kind of like honor this time, because it does pass by really fast, because there's so many activities and stuff going on. That, you know, just a couple quick things. I'm not going to go, you know, way into detail about them, because I think that a lot of people, we've talked about things, isn't it, just making like real simple rituals about like doing a Yule log ritual. I mean, you can take a log, and if you have a fireplace, you can make it a family thing where each of you help to decorate the Yule log. You can carve or paint little symbols on it. You can add some little pieces of, you know, pine tree onto it. You can tie ribbons on it, put little pine cones on it, and just so many different things that you can do. And just make that kind of like a family thing about, and make it about togetherness and celebrating the return of the light. You could also, like, if you have a holiday tree, you know, you can do some kind of a like a tree blessing ritual. You know, you might surround it with a circle of love and protection. And you know what I really, I'll tell you, that's another thing that I really connect with strongly around this time, is I have old Christmas tree ornaments.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them, you know, yeah, a lot of them belonged to my mom, and a lot of them were made by my kids, who are now in their 40s and 50s, when they were little kids. And so I actually put those in a separate box, because I don't want them to get broken. But I put them up, and it's just like, you know, there's something magical about that, because it just, you know, if I think about all the different things that I put on the tree, I mean, to me, those are the most special. They might not be the most spectacular looking, but I know one of my favorite ones is this old angel. It has to be, well, I don't know, it probably was made like 70 or 80 years ago. And that's why I'm really, really super careful with it. But it's got a little wooden head, and it's got some cloth, some stiffened cloth to make its breasts. And then it's got these metal, flimsy metal wings on the back of it, and a little halo thing around its head. And it's like, that's one of my favorites because it was my mom. And it just makes me think about her every time I put it on the tree each year.
Right.
Yeah.
I know.
And so, yeah. How about you?
Oh, honey, yeah. You're saying that, and I'm sitting here going, I have things that my daughter made. I have, you know, different things that were part of my mom and when we had our trees. Actually, what I did was when I moved, from California here, I divided up a lot of the Christmas ornaments to give some of those that were part of my mom and the dynamic of my growing up to my daughter. And so she puts them on the tree. She has obviously ornaments that are made by her stepkids, and they were little, and now they're, you know, in their 20s. And, you know, so there are these things that is part of our history. And I'm, you know, sad that, you know, I don't know some of the things I think were harmed in the tornado that came over us. I don't know some of the particulars. I have to connect with her, because if that's the case, I still have others that I can, you know, give to her. But it's about the history. I have a creche that my dad bought. And he put it on the mantle in our, you know, over our fireplace. And it was there for 20 some odd years. I can't, more, you know, it was back when we were kids. And eventually when they moved out of that house and moved up north to be near me in Sonoma County, you know, there were a lot of things that got distributed, and I got that. So I have had that, and that goes out. So even though I may not have a fireplace now, and when I was in my mobile, it was a fake fireplace, it goes on a mantle. It goes, it always is there. And, you know, it's the whole thing. And even though I'm pagan, I still have that, because that's family energy. That's our ancestral energies in the form of this item, not necessarily to be so rigid, but just the memories and the love and the caring around that being put out to remember that, you know, togetherness. So we have a few more minutes before we have to do our starting to close. So is there anything you want to kind of tie up?
I guess I would just say, you know, I feel La Befana, the Italian Good Witch, is an intriguing and fun spirit to invite into your Yuletide celebrations. In fact, you know, just the whole Yuletide is filled with many spirits from mythology, angels, and of course always our loved ones and our ancestors. And this is a season of celebrating the return of light, which can take so many forms. And so I advise taking care of yourself by not skipping over the basics while preparing for festivities. Make sleep and proper diet and some enjoyable stress-busting physical activity, you know, make that your first priority. And then you will have a well of energy and light within to draw from when you hold space or share space with both the living and the dead throughout the Yuletide season.
Thank you. So with that, we'll do a little cleanup here so we get ourselves organized. Obviously, continuing with the Yuletide Spirits theme of the month, we will actually be going into the magic of 12-12 and numerological synchronicities, which, Yeah, kind of has a different feel in terms of what we're doing, but again, has something interesting.
Yeah.
And so to contact either Deb or I, you can find us at www.readersandrootworkers.org, www.hoodoopsychics.com. For Deb, you can find her at www.beeeee.com for her work and help. For me, you can find me at www.elvyra.com that's pretty much where I am in terms of websites. So I think for us, we are, you know, kind of coming to our end of this episode. So I feel that it is a good time for us to start finding the joy, no matter what is going on out in the world, and there's a lot there that we can find within ourselves, our families, our community. And, you know, if nothing else, walking outside and, you know, even the brisk air, the grateful ability to just breathe that in for that moment and experience it. So at that, I'm turning it over to you, Deb, for us to do closure.
Yay.
Yay.
Yeah. So this is a fun show. So now's our final goodbye. And so next time. Or until next time, all of our magical friends, witch on, witch well, and witch wisely.
Woohoo!
Thank you for listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio broadcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Central, and is available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website at witchpriestessandcauldron.com. That's witchpriestessandcauldron.com. Until next time, merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. Blessed be.